Hello everyone, welcome to the Cyber Weekly. The Cyber Weekly is a podcast which talks about cybersecurity and book reviews with me, Deogratius Okello, and Josephine Olope, my co-host. Josephine, 22 episodes. We are about to clock 25.
We're not doing badly at all, though.
Yeah,
and well done to you for keeping us going.
Thank you. In fact, the episode 25 will happen also on the 25th. Our production of it, if you notice.
On the 25th?
Yeah, it was on the 25th.
But today is 4th.
Yeah. So, if you're doing this one on 22nd,
I don't understand. Today is the 4th.
And we are doing the 22nd episode. Then the next one is on 11th, 23rd.
Mm-hmm. 18th, 24th. Okay. I get what you're saying. Yeah. This is not the 25th. This is 22th. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, I was confusing. Yeah. True. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Mm. Nice coincidences.
I get so.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'll be preparing something small. We have today's a security review day. So we are having three major stories we are sharing with the audience. Starting from Josephine, where she will talk about Sam Bankman and his 25 years and, who Sam Bankman is. Then we'll go into the past Tuesday and the different parts which were announced last month. Then we'll now dive into the cyber gangs and Josephine will tell us about cyber gangs. She knows more about them than me.
Having done my research.
A 1 year research or a 1 day research?
A couple of hours. No, like 15, 20 minutes.
Then we'll have conversation with the concerning the APT31. Then finally we'll have a conversation concerning the different things we found unique this week. So with Sam Bankman, who is Sam Bankman?
Okay, so Sam Bankman has been in the news. It's actually Sam Bankman-Fried, is also known as SBF. He's been in the news for the wrong reasons. So, but he previously to being arrested and sentenced, he was a major figure in the cryptocurrency world. From the research I did, found that he was born in 1992. I don't know if that makes him younger or older than you.
I don't know how young I am for some reason.
And
conversation with Dr. Johannes Ulrich was talking about vulnerabilities which are older than me. I'm like, okay, yeah, I feel young.
I do remember him asking you whether you remembered. I think you talked about Y2K as well. And you're like, I think that was before my time. Anyway, so Sam Bankman-Fried, SBF, was very smart. He's a math prodigy, and he's the son of two Stanford law professors. He studied physics at MIT. He started his life trading in a quant firm. A quant firm is a quantitative specialized investment firm that uses a lot of technology algorithms to make trading decisions. So he traded it with that until the late 2017. And then he founded his quantitative trading firm called Alameda Research in 2017. In 2019, he launched FTX, a cryptocurrency exchange. And then it grew to become one of the largest in the world at its peak. In early 2022, investors valued it at about $40 billion. And by that stage, his net worth was estimated at $24 billion, making him one of the wealthiest people in crypto. And most of his wealth sat in FTX and some of the tokens, FTT tokens. So FTX issued tokens called FTTs, which where his wealth sat. So yeah, so that's about SBF. Yeah, that's who he was, or who he is.
So now let's dive into his arrest. Tell us a little bit about that and why he was arrested.
So the reason he was arrested was because the prosecutors felt that they alleged that he had diverted over $8 billion of FTX customer deposits, and they also alleged that he used that money for first of all for propping up his crypto hedge fund, the Alameda Research. Alameda Research had apparently taken large loans from FTX customers' funds, and it used it to make risky trades. He also funded a very lavish lifestyle, had lots of real estate properties, and he also used his tried to influence the regulations surrounding cryptocurrency through campaign contributions. There was definitely an questionable practice around between FTX and Alameda because of the large loans that Alameda was getting from FTX, and that money was coming from customer deposits. So when these concerns, which had been not been published, when they became published, when they became public, customers then rushed to withdraw their money from FTX, and FTX obviously couldn't deal with all the withdrawals because of the liquidity issues. So it led them to being declared bankrupt in November 2022. As a consequence of that, then Bankfried, BKF, resigned as FTX's CEO. The company filed for bankruptcy protection in November 2022. Now, so the legal case then that was brought against him was around the fraud. They felt that, first of all, that him and his BKF and his associate lied about FTX's financial health. And it meant that investors were misled, thinking that it was really wealthy when it wasn't. It misled customers. It misled lenders. Then there was a second charge of misappropriation, that he used customer deposits for his personal gain. So obviously he funded his lavish lifestyle, he funded his other ventures, and then he also used his money for campaign. Now this one I'll probably have to read up more about. But by the time these cases were brought against him, he was in the Bahamas. And he was arrested once the case against him had been brought. He was arrested in December 2022 after being, he was accused of basically orchestrating one of the biggest financial frauds in American history, according to U.S. prosecutors. So the outcome of the legal case was that he was found guilty on all counts. The fraud, misappropriation, campaign, finance violations. So he was found guilty in November 2023, and he was sentenced just last month to 25 years. I think he was also ordered to forfeit $11 billion. Of course, his family say they're going to appeal, but that is the state. That is where we are with him. So he's basically going to jail. There's a lot of a lot of financial crime has been, they say a lot of financial crime, the people don't tend to serve the full sentence. they tend to do half. So they're everyone speculating that he'll probably not for the serve the full sentence, especially if exhibits good behavior, etc. But that's where we are now.
I admire your research skills. That all happened in a few hours.
Yes. Google is your friend. Bing, Copilot, all those.
Mm-hmm. All of them. Yes, combine.
Yep. You try all sorts. Yeah.
I respect.
So that was Sam Bankman-Fried. So now on to Patch Tuesday. What were your key findings in Patch Tuesday?
Well, as we all know about Patch Tuesday, the first or second week of the month, the Tuesday, they usually release patches, and basically they upload in an operating system in different devices, but it's usually the Microsoft one. So one of the things they found were 60 flaws, and which were 60 flaw fixes, 18 RCE bug fixes. There were 24 elevation of privilege vulnerabilities, meaning when the attacker actually attacks your system, they're able to, escalate their privileges to their root or system in Windows. They had 3 feature bypass vulnerabilities, meaning bypassing the security features of Windows. 18 RCEs. RCE is a remote code execution, meaning someone can easily access your machine remotely from a different planet, different region. There were 66 information disclosure vulnerabilities. That one deals with basically data being disclosed. Then the denial of service spoofing. Those are the ones which now the ones which stood out according to the research I made was one which is the Microsoft Azure Kubernetes. This is now the online servers, the operating system online, the cloud platform. They had an issue of elevation of privilege vulnerability, where an authenticated user would be able to gain access to the system, the root privileges. Followed by Microsoft Defender Security, which one was just for the feature bypass, where someone with authenticated would successfully exploit the vulnerability. For people who are watching, if you see me turning this side, yes, no, I'm looking at the paper which I prepared for today. Then followed by CVE 2021-2141, which is the Skype. I don't know who still uses Skype. Do you still use Skype, Joseph?
No, and I never really used it that much, to be honest. I don't use it.
So there's also one for Skype vulnerability, actually remote code execution vulnerability. Yeah. Then there are other companies also which released, Apple being one of them. They had 2 zero-day vulnerabilities which were patching. Google also had several, especially for Android. So Android users, please update your operating system. Yeah, I guess that's it when it comes to the vulnerabilities.
Okay, thanks for that.
If cybersecurity fails, there's also being a news anchor.
Also being a what, sorry?
A news anchor.
For who? For you? Anything's possible if you want to do it.
Yeah. So, I guess the next part is yours or mine?
I think it's mine.
Okay. So we are having this cyber gang. So there's this cyber gang. Please tell us about this cyber gang and the victims, the 250 victims rescued.
Okay, so I had not heard about this before, but apparently the cyber gangs have been operating in Cambodia for a number of years, but the operations is significantly increased during the pandemic. And it's also not, I know this story is about Indian government rescuing, sorry, the Indian police rescuing Indian victims, but it does affect a lot, thousands of people from other areas as well, I think all around the world, but mainly Taiwan, Vietnam, Thailand, and India, of course. So what the cyber gangs do is that they trick people, mostly through online jobs. Remember, we talked about online jobs and through reputable platforms like Facebook. So you get in your Facebook feed, you get very interesting and very exciting job offer. It's basically, so an employer in Cambodia is looking for new staff. The only requirement they have is computer skills, it's generous salary. And of course, that when most people, when they look at the salary, they're like, wow, this is so much more than what I earn. So definitely it attracts people. Unfortunately, once they go to get to the job, they go to Cambodia, they find that it's not a typical admin job that they were expecting. They find that they have actually been sold to criminal gangs and that these criminal gangs now own them. So they are forced to become cyber criminals or cyber slaves, some people call them. So their job is basically to look through the internet for victims who they can trick into investing in online scams, you know, like the pyramid schemes. And of course, it's not that they have the option not to work. If they don't work, they're likely to face torture or they're likely to be beaten. They have very long work hours. And they're told that they can only return after paying a huge ransom. In the one case of a Vietnam lady who fell for this scam and went with her husband to Cambodia, they managed to escape. She tells, there's a Guardian newspaper article where she says that she was promised a salary of between $800 and $900 a month. In the first month, she received only $200. By the second and third month, she received nothing. She was also told that she had to earn $12,000 for the company every month, and that every 5 days she had to attract two new customers to be tricked into sending money. If she didn't meet her targets, her pay would be deducted, and her bosses, who are Chinese mostly, were threatened her with violence. And all those people who have been rescued, excuse me, described their condition as living hell. So the situation in Cambodia has become really severe, that the U.S. has downgraded Cambodia in its trafficking in persons annual report. So with the reason the Indian government got involved was because the people who had, Indian citizens who had fallen for this scam, actually informed the India embassy in Cambodia about their situation. So the country then worked with the Cambodian authorities to locate and bring them back to India. According to India Today, they think there are at least 5,000 more Indians held captive in Cambodia and forced to launch scams that have generated nearly $60 million in the last 6 months. So those are huge numbers. And it's a real syndicate. It's a real, real business. Unfortunately, for the people in Thailand who go back, they face stigma, and they also face illegal charges because of their criminal activity. Even though it has been forced on them, they also face that challenge. So, I mean, the thing is, it is, you know, these online jobs, we talked about them before, are real. If they're too good to be true, then they are good to be true, and in this case it's been a scam, and people have unfortunately, some people have lost their lives, but definitely lose their freedom, and they've been treated like slaves.
I'm always impressed by your research.
There's a lot on the internet.
You should have like a course on Skillshare or something or LinkedIn on how to research as
But
a cybersecurity professional.
you gave me a very good link to start with, so that's where I started. I had not heard about it before, so that is where I started. And then you just start getting articles on the internet, different, you know, the publications talk about this.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. So then we go on to APT31. Can you tell us a little bit more about that and the attack techniques that are used? Explain what APT31 is, because I also don't know what it is. I didn't research this one.
Okay. So now most of the times they usually when there's a new threat group, they usually categorize it. So APT is just advanced persistent threat. Then the 31 is the number they allocate for it. So if you're tracking it with other people, they'll track it based on that. And then they also track, they're usually multiple names associated with a single group. So you'll find it's APT31, and this one is also called zirconium. So you find that they're tracking it with different names, because they can, you know, show different names when they're tracing them. And then they'll look for maybe associated activities which are similar, because most of the threat groups usually have similar patterns. So they'll be like, okay, this is done like this before. These guys are the ones who store this particular information, and this is how they usually, you know, use that information. So they will track that information based on that group. So now, like this one, they've been around quite some time. They deal with everything, starting from the, you know, the spear phishing to RCEs, remote code execution, to situations where they are stealing information from governments and using it. You've heard of situations where the, you know, most of the time these companies like the NSA and all that, they usually come up with the ways of hacking into systems. Their companies actually measure into that. So now what happens is when that happens, it's some dubious individuals decide to hack that organization. They steal those ways of actually those tools they use for, you know, hacking. Then they share it with the rest of the world or the rest of the criminal gangs. So that's basically how most of the time it happens. A good example would be WannaCry, which was I believe it was an NSA program for security, which they had developed. Then they hacked into their system, they stole it, shared it with the whole world, led to multiple breaches of multiple organizations. And yeah, this group is also associated to something like that. So, and during even the elections of recent, the one for the US, they were trying to target those people of Biden and also Trump. To actually, you know, attack them to get information from them. And it's a Chinese group also. Also, yeah, part of the tracking, they also get the information about the country they are based in. Yeah, but yeah, this is a third group which you should take care of. If you, of course, now with this in the show notes, we have placed also the link to it. You look at it and you'll notice that there are different vulnerabilities which they usually measure in, and the different techniques they usually use. And it's a MITRE attack framework. I used MITRE for this. So with MITRE, they give you every information concerning them. One of them being is the way they acquire information, the different infrastructures they usually attack. the way they do it in both the enterprise level and these other, I think they made the most in the enterprise. So yeah, all the techniques they use, you'll be able to see them and yeah, what to avoid. Yeah, so that's it about that.
Okay, well, that's interesting. How this, anyway, I guess security has become a business. So yeah, so yeah, just
So
have to
you
be
might
vigilant.
have a company which specialize in just finding vulnerabilities and creating exploits for those vulnerabilities. And it's a very lucrative business because we always deal with on the government. And yeah.
Okay.
So we are down to the last thing, Josephine. Today, I don't know what you were rushing for. I don't know if you have.
I don't know. Is it because but it's same kind of answers as before. I actually thought I spoke for long, but yeah.
If you look at the time, I don't think we've talked for that.
40 minutes.
No,
But it's okay. Okay.
It's
Maybe 90.
But anyways, yeah. So, one of the things we did a twist for this time is we are looking at different things. I told Josephine to suggest something which our listeners would want to look at, not about the speak of cybersecurity. Yeah, but something which stood out for her. So yeah. Yes, Josephine, what stood out for you? And what are you suggesting for our listeners to look at?
I think it stood out because it's very Uganda specific. I had not heard about this organization before, and so I thought it was interesting. Essentially, it's an article published by PML Daily. It's a publication of Post Media Limited, a professional digital new media company in Uganda. So it was published on the 29th of March last month. So there's an organization called Consent. It does customer advocacy, but it has urged all stakeholders, including all our regulators like NITA, Uganda Communications Commission, Electricity Regulatory Authority, National Bureau of Standards, academia. It's basically urged everyone that we need to work hard to work together to safeguard consumers in Uganda amid artificial intelligence penetration. Now, the reason this is interesting for me is because I wanted to understand the link between consumer protection and AI. According to them, to Consent, they think that AI is already running the economy in our households, in education, and that it plays a role in agriculture, health, food safety, traffic lights, and security. And they feel that there's a lot of data being collected by AI, and that if it's not well used, it ends up affecting the consumer. So they want to have regulations and frameworks in place to protect the consumer, protect the economy, and protect the country. Now, the reason this is interesting for me is because I want to understand further how, first of all, AI is being applied to the areas they talk about. So I want to do more research and dig into it. And then also, if AI is being applied already extensively in these areas, what data is being collected, how it is being used, and how they're going to address the challenge of having regulation and frameworks in place to protect the consumer. So that's something that I'm very interested in. It was interesting to me because I felt that it didn't give enough detail on all of this. So it's something that I'm going to pick up on and follow through. So that's why I picked interest in it.
Okay. Yeah. Same we're all thinking about AI because also my mind is about AI, but it's the new episode of what's it called? The new episode. Click here. So click here. It's a podcast just like this one. They have episodes every week. It's a weekly thing. They usually have different stories, and the story of this week was about how AI is being used to track poachers, or actually save elephants from poachers. So the poachers, usually come in the middle of the night and try to, get the elephants because of the different benefits they get from the horns, or how do they call it, the hooves? I don't know. Yeah,
tusks.
The tusks.
Tusks. Yeah.
Yeah. So now, there's a company called Food Punch AI. This group, or this company, deals with unique projects concerning AI, and they come up with solutions for it. So, coming up with a way of tracking. One, they were trying to figure out how to ensure that they're able to track before, like, cars passing in that region, which is not supposed to happen in the middle of the night, because you don't expect cars to be passing by in such areas in the middle of the night. So yeah, things like that. So the setting up trackers and all that, and how do you implement it in such an area? How do you use, energy which is easily chargeable? Because there is that aspect of, when you're using solar panels, apparently it's not that good in such area, because you'll find maybe an animal breaking into the stuff, and it's light. Kind of affects them, so yeah, they end up destroying the stuff. So it is not a very good, reasonable way of, powering it. And the aspect of the internet. Remember, yeah, deep in the jungle, so that aspect of internet had to be resolved. So yeah, it's a very interesting episode. And it's actually happening in Africa, Central African Republic, and. This food punch, it's interesting. They have like a bit 6 weeks of doing a project, because some of them are already working for some of these large organizations. So they get a leave of like 6 weeks, and they work on this project in that particular time, and they move on to the next thing. So, yeah, it's a very interesting episode.
Yeah, that sounds really good. You've shared it in the show notes?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's interesting. Good to see the use cases of AI, I think, especially helping us in Africa. That's a really good thing to see.
Yeah, it's really a good
one. Yeah.
So, aside from that, last time we told Josephine to do the end scene, she was funny. I don't know if she positioned.
I think you can do it this time. We can alternate.
Okay, fine. So, for the end scene, like and subscribe. Check out our security reviews, which will be appearing on the side of Josephine's in. So if you don't see the fence screen, it's best to get lost. That's the most visit. So yeah, apart from that, yeah, thank you.